One of the chesodim that are mentioned in Parshas Mishpatim is in Kesef Telav Esalmi, you should loan my people money without charging interest. And this is considered one of the chesed's that a Jew should do to another Jew. If he needs help, if he needs money, you loan him money, you don't charge him interest, because that is a way of helping him out. But the pasuk is very unusual in the expression that it uses. The pasuk says, "Im kesef telav es ami," if you will loan my people money, "es ani imach," the poor man within you. Imach is a very unusual expression, as if implying that you're going to loan the poor man within you or in you. Losia lo kenesha, don't be upon him like a creditor. Lo tasimu lav neshach, don't charge interest. And Rashi picks up on the fact that the pasuk says the poor man within you. Says Rashi, what this means is havi mistakel ba'atzmacha ki'ilu ata ani. When you're loaning that person money, the way you should be doing it is that you should look upon yourself as if you're the poor man. So what the pasuk is saying is, when you're loaning money, understand you're loaning to the poor person within you. You are the poor person. Understand the relationship. Understand that you're the ani, and loan him that way. Now, this pasuk, loosely translated, would be a very nice understanding that when you loan someone money, you should be concerned, you should be a mensch, do it with care, and do it with concern. But the problem is that Rashi seems to indicate that the pasuk is to be taken literally, in the sense that when you loan money, you're supposed to view it as if you're the poor man. Now, in modern society, that may not be that difficult. The bottom line is, all of us are wealthy. Every one of us can afford housing, clothing, transportation. There's almost no concept of real poverty in our world. Yeah. But there were many, many generations when poverty was real. Poverty real meant that you didn't have food to eat, you couldn't afford clothing, you didn't have housing, and there was a real social caste system. There were people who were extraordinarily wealthy, and there were huge masses of people who were literally dirt poor. Now imagine for a minute that you were one of the lucky few. You were the wealthy fellow, and you were the employer of the town. You owned the lumber mill in town, and the 700 men working under your employ all lived in that town. Needless to say, when you walk into shul, the whole shul stands up for you, because you are the usher. Says the pasuk, when someone comes over to you who's destitute, who's going to be thrown out of his little hut, and he begs you for a loan, look at it as if you're the poor person. Sounds rather unusual and sounds impossible to fulfill. You could be creative, and you could have a nice imagination, you could act with concern, but you can't view yourself as the poor man when you're wealthy. He's poor, you're rich. Why is the pasuk demanding of me something that's unnatural, something that seems impossible to do, and doesn't seem to fit the situation at all? And I'd like to see if we could get a better understanding of this Rashi, and what Rashi's telling us the pasuk is saying. But to do that, I'd like to focus on a little bit different part of the Torah. There's another part of the Torah that describes a phenomenon of when you will be wealthy. You see, the Klal Yisrael as a unit is supposed to be wealthy. When we're living in our own land, when we have peace, and when we have the prosperity that's due to the Klal Yisrael, we're all supposed to be well off, and that's what the Torah guarantees to us, provided we do what we're supposed to do. But along the path, the Psukim describe a rather unusual situation. Your cattle and your sheep will increase, the kesev azar of yirbalach, and gold and silver will become accumulated, v'chol ha'shelecha yarbe, everything that you have will increase, you'll have great wealth. V'ram levavecha, your heart will become hoody, v'shachachtes Hashem lakecha, and you'll forget Hashem. The problem with the psukim is that it seems to be a progression. You'll get wealthy, you'll get hoody, and you'll forget Hashem, almost as if it's a given. And the Orcha Sadikim explains the fact that it is a given. If you become wealthy, you will become haughty. And if you become haughty, you will forget Hashem. And while that does seem to have some resonance and seems to be correct, the question is why? Why is the Torah saying that it's an automatic, if you become rich, you'll become haughty, if you become haughty, you will become arrogant and you will forget Hashem? The question is, why is there an automatic relationship? Why does one lead to the next? And why is that a progression? And what I'd like to do to understand this better is focus in on this midah called gaiva. Gaiva, arrogance, is one of the most misunderstood midos around. In fact, if you ask the typical person to define for you what is arrogance, they'll tell you the manifestation. You know, he acts pompous and haughty, and he brags, and he talks about himself a lot, and he's very, very much a show-off. The story of the rock star. For an hour, the rock star is going on and on and on about himself and his accomplishments and how famous he is and how well-known he is. And finally, after the hour tirade, he says to his partner who he's speaking to, "Enough about me. Let's talk about you. What do you think of my last album?" That is an example of a show-off, a braggart. But what is gaiva? What is arrogance? What is the nature of it? How do you define this midah? And I think if you ask most people to define the midah, I don't think most people actually can. And I'd like to share with you what the Mesil Sharm says is the definition of arrogance. He says the definition of arrogance is the thought that to me is fit tehillah, praise and honor is fit to me. I am above other people. I am chashuv, and I have an inner sense of I am a chashuv person worthy of praise and different than you. And when you think about that definition, you quickly realize something is amiss. Because A, aren't we supposed to think we're chashuv? B, isn't it true that many people are fit for praise? And imagine for a minute that you are a person who is accomplished. Imagine that for a moment you're a person who's done many major things in your life. You've accomplished a lot. Shouldn't you recognize who you are? Shouldn't you have a sense of what you've done? And I'd like to share with you why many people do not properly understand this midah. Imagine for a minute that my name is Yaakov Shweki. And I get up there on stage and I sing. Thousands of people come. Do you mean to tell me that I'm supposed to say, actually, I have a voice like a frog. I croak. The thousands of people, I don't know, they're mishuganas. I don't know why they come. I can't figure it out for the life of me. I mean, but that seems to be what the Mesil Sharm is saying, right? I'm not supposed to feel choshev. I'm not supposed to feel praise is coming to me. I'm not supposed to feel above other people. But what you quickly understand is that there's a very real distinction between gaiva and the attribute itself. And let me explain to you what I mean. If you have a beautiful voice that is not arrogant at all, it's very, very accurate if you have a beautiful voice. But the question is, therefore what? You see, as long as I understand that I don't know how to form the larynx, I don't know how to shape the entire chamber for the sound, I don't know how to stretch the vocal cords, as long as I understand that this is a gift given to me by Hashem, there's no gaiva there. In the 60s and the 70s, there was a Jewish girl named Barbara Streisand who became a very famous singer. She was an attractive woman. She got involved in movies. And at a certain point, the question was asked to her, why don't you do something about your nose? Because she had quite an appendage. And it really greatly affected the way she looked. And she explained very clearly as follows. The voice resonates throughout the chamber of the entire upper body. If I change the shape of my nose, I don't know what my voice is going to sound like. And she was correct. You see, I am not capable of stretching the vocal cords, nor creating the cavity, nor creating that sound. Knowing that I have a gorgeous voice, if it's correct, is not arrogant. Provided that I understand that it was a gift given to me by Hashem, and I have that gift. Arrogance is when I begin assuming credit for the attribute. You see, it's I have a gorgeous voice. The first step is where I begin taking credit for the attribute, and the second step is where I become elevated, significant, and important. a person of my stature who sings like me is different than you. I become very chashuv. I am worthy of praise. I am above you because it's just who I am. You see, the attribute, knowing that you have a beautiful voice, if you're correct, is not arrogant. It's when you take credit for the attribute, as if to say, I formed the voice. And the second stage where I feel chashuv because it is me, that's where gaiva comes in. And if you study all of the various attributes that a person has, if in fact he remains accurate in his understanding, let's assume for a minute that I was brilliant. Let's assume for a moment that I knew Kol HaTorah Kula. And I really could spout back to you any Gemara anywhere in Shas. For me to get up there and say, oh, really, I don't know anything, would be sheker. If Rav Moshe Feinstein would get up and say, I don't know how to learn, that would be the height of folly. He knows how to learn very, very well. But the question is, therefore, what? Did I weave the 100 billion neurons of the brain? Did I write the Torah? And do I actually have the capacity to create it? Hashem gave me these strengths. Hashem put me in this body. And I'm in Hashem's world. This is a kli that I was given, whether it's my voice, whether it's my brain, whether it's my appearance, whether it's any talent, provided that I understand that it comes from Hashem, temporarily given to me, and could potentially leave me. There's no arrogance. It's once I begin taking credit for the attribute, once I begin translating it into, I am chashuv, I am important, that's when arrogance falls into place. I hate to admit this here because I was a fan of Muhammad Ali as a kid, but Muhammad Ali once made one of the most bombastic statements maybe ever said by a human being. He got up in public and said something akin to the following. Boxing? Boxing were nothing. Boxing was just a way of introducing Muhammad Ali to the world. Now, if it weren't for boxing, Muhammad Ali would be sweeping out the bathrooms in McDonald's today. He became such a famous individual that they did a survey worldwide, and it turned out that more children recognized his face than Mickey Mouse, to show you the extent of his fame. But the reason why he became famous was only because he was a fantastic fighter, boxer, showman, but that's who he was. Had he remained within the context of God gave me these talents, I have this amazing ability to dance, to bob, to weave, to punch. God gave me these talents. There wouldn't be a shemitz, not an iota of arrogance. But that's not where it ends. And once I have this talent, it's almost natural within the human to take this sort of sense of a person like me naturally is gifted and talented. And the next step of that is I am worthy of praise because I am a talented fellow. I'm a very gifted individual. I'm above the rest of the world. I'm different. I'm separate. I'm worthy of being treated differently. And that is the exact definition of arrogance. When it's I am chashuv, I am important, I've long ago accepted responsibility for those traits, for those attributes, and it's now a definition of I. If you would like to see the easiest stepping stone to arrogance, money, specifically wealth, is it. You see, the Mesillas Yesharim cautions us. He says, any midah tova, any attribute that you have, you're in grave danger. If you have any talent whatsoever, and you're really, really good at it, he says you're in grave danger of falling into the trap of gaiva. It doesn't mean you'll have to become an arrogant buffoon. It doesn't mean you will. He says you're in grave danger. But of all of the various situations in life, the one that's the most dangerous, the one that's most likely to lead you to arrogance is wealth. And I'll explain to you why. I knew a fellow who could not earn a living. For many, many years, he could not earn a living, could not support his family. He had a beautiful family, and he was constantly figuring out different ways to beg people for alms to support him. As it turned out, I knew the situation well. He had an older father. His father had done very well. His father was quite wealthy, and his father died. the day that I found out that his father died, I went over to my wife and I said, just watch. Just watch. Everybody used to make fun of this guy. Everyone used to look down upon him. Just watch how the world will change its tune. Watch the cover that they treat him with. Watch the regard that they react to him with. And watch the questions that they begin asking him. Because now that he's wealthy, he's a wise person. And if you don't think this is correct, study the world. There's some assumption that's very difficult to understand why, but if a fellow has money, he must be smart, he must be wise, and I'm going to ask him advice. And if you'd like to see this in practice, bear with me for this following mushal. Imagine the following. Imagine that you get a call from a lawyer, and he says to you as follows, is your name so-and-so? Yeah, it is. Well, I just want to tell you that, your uncle Bob died, and he left you a large inheritance. At which point you say, Uncle Bob? I don't have an Uncle Bob. Well, apparently he thought you did, because he wrote you as a sole inheritor of his estate. Uncle Bob? Oh, yeah, my father had an Uncle Bob. Oh, yeah, I haven't seen him since my bar mitzvah. Well, says the lawyer to you, he must have said something pretty bright. Why then? Because he left you as the sole inheritor. Come down to my office, they sign the papers back and forth. Anyway, you've just inherited $450 million. Now, I want you to watch very carefully what happens. When you sign on those documents, you now become the heir to that estate. Nothing changes. You're exactly the same fellow you were this morning as you are this afternoon. Nothing changed at all. Same guy, regular guy, nothing happens. But as things start developing, there's a little bit of a change. You see, once you have to hire an entire office to just write the Meiser checks out, once people start finding out about your great wealth and they start giving you all kinds of kibbudim that you never got, you used to never even be able to get an aliyah shul. Now it's every week at Shlishi. They put you right there on the front dais. You go to a wedding and all of a sudden they start giving you Kriyas Aksuba and you don't even know how to read Hebrew. And you find yourself in a very different place. People sit down next to you and they ask you all kinds of questions and advice and business questions. And you really initially say, listen guys, I don't know nothing. But after a while you get used to this kind of treatment. And after a while you recognize that there are certain differences between me and the rest of the world, you know. And you start being less comfortable being amongst the common people. You know, and to tell you the truth, you know, flying business class to Israel, it used to be nice, but there are so many of those, like, what do they call, I don't mean to, you know, those regular people there. I just don't, you know, I don't feel so, like, comfortable being amongst those kind of regular people. And a very, very interesting thing starts happening. And within a short amount of time, you become a rich man. And a rich man is different than anyone else. You see, it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank. It doesn't matter what your actual net worth is. The minute you think of yourself as a wealthy man, you're in desperate, deep trouble. Because rich men are different than the rest of the world. Rich men are deserving of honor. Rich men drive different types of cars, marry different type of women, live in different types of homes, because I'm a little bit different than the rest of the population. And it's a very interesting thing that money has this almost hypnotic effect. It has this almost hypnotic effect that you begin thinking of yourself different, above, separate, and a very different sort of person. Says the Torah, it's almost axiomatic. It's almost guaranteed. You will increase your money, you'll feel haughty in your heart, and then you will forget God. And you will know, would you like to know why you'll forget Hashem? It's for one simple reason. I am very, very chashuv. I am very, very important. I'm mighty and weighty and independent. I need no one. I don't need my kids. I don't need my wife. I don't need Hashem. A mighty, powerful, important person like me doesn't even need God. And if you don't quite hear this yet, let's watch the solution. Would you like to know the solution to all arrogance? One simple observation can cure the disease like that. Here's the observation. I'm young, I'm healthy. Imirtza Hashem, I pray to God that I will one day be an old man. Because the other choice isn't so pretty. Well, look around at other old men. They walk with walkers. So just see it. Just see that walker. See yourself holding that walker step by step, having to move it and shuffle, move it and shuffle, move it and shuffle. And if you could put yourself into that position, paruch tifruch, your arrogance will float away. Why? Because in that position, I'm extraordinarily dependent, extraordinarily weak. I'm not mighty, I'm not powerful, I'm not independent, I'm very dependent. The only way a human being can ever have a sense of arrogance is if he lives in the biggest state in the union that's called the state of delusion. You see, the only way a person can really have arrogance in their heart is if they believe the current state will last forever. I'm young, I'm healthy, and that will be forever. I'm rich, I'll always be rich. Nothing will change. The minute you recognize the reality of life, that every young person who was ever born eventually became old, that reality brings to you a very clear cognition. And that is, I'm not young forever. This attribute that I so glorify myself in, my gorgeous voice, will leave me. My beauty will fade. My money will leave me. And it all doesn't matter, because when I'm hunched over that walker, I'm barely able to make my steps. If I'm lucky, I quickly understand that the great, powerful, mighty, independent me isn't. Gaiva can only exist in a state of delusion, and the current state will be forever. We have two brachas we say in the morning that should be a solution to arrogance. Matir asurim, zokef kefufim. Matir asurim means, Hashem, you free the bound. The next time you see a man who suffered a stroke, bound to his wheelchair, who cannot do this action, flexing up, he can't do that, say the bracha of Matir Asurim, Hashem, you release the bound. You'll say it with a very different kavana. And then when you say the word Zokef Kefufim, Hashem, you straighten out those who are bent over, just watch an old man, any old man, and it doesn't matter how wealthy, how smart, how honored he was, I guarantee, stooped over the cane, the walker, he's not proud and overbearing. The only way that I could have the sense of self-importance, of haughtiness, is because I sincerely, firmly believe that the current state will last forever. Good morning, the reality is quite different. It will not. It too shall pass. I will no longer be in this state. And once I get that, then everything falls away. There's something I mentioned in the Rosh Hashanah Shmuz that bears repeating. The Granat, Natali Trupp, and the Rosh Hashiva, was once approached by a certain balabas in town. And this balabas came over to the Granat and said as follows, how could I say these words in Slichos? In Slichos, I say the words, Kirashayim, Kedolim, Kirashim, Dafaknu, Dilasecha, Hashem, we bang on your doors as poor, impoverished men. How could I utter those words? I'm a wealthy industrialist, 500 men in my employ. How could I lie and say to Hashem, I knock on your doors, a poor man, I'm wealthy? Says the Granat, you're making one mistake. You're assuming that because last Rosh Hashanah, you got a gezar din, a decree of success, of wealth, you're assuming that this Rosh Hashanah again, you'll be granted that same decree. But if you understood that that question itself is an open suffix, there's a question that's being decided on this very Rosh Hashanah. Last Rosh Hashanah you were granted wealth, what will be this Rosh Hashanah? If you understood that that question was open, you'd understand that you have no chazakah. You have no guarantee. Because you were granted it last year, you're not guaranteed to have it again. You might and you might not. But if you understood that, you'd understand that you're standing in front of Hashem literally like a poor man, because that's the reality of life. Whether it's this year, whether it's next year, whether it's 20 years from now, it'll be taken from you. And because you were granted it last year, doesn't mean you'll be granted it this year. And that, my friends, is a tremendous, tremendous yesod for understanding life. There are no guarantees. There are no guarantees in health. There are no guarantees in well-being. There's certainly no guarantees in financial success. And I believe that that's exactly what Rashi is sharing with us. When you're a wealthy man and an ani comes over to you and you loan him the money, understand you are the ani. Why? Because you're not the owner of this money. Hashem granted it to you. Hashem may continue to grant it to you. Hashem may take it away. But that shaila is revisited every year. Don't assume you're so guaranteed in your position. Don't look at yourself as the usher, because it's false. It's delusional. It's a state that is right now, that will pass, that will change. Don't have the sense of you're an usher, because that state will change. And what Rashi is telling us is, when you loan that poor man the money, understand that that money was granted to you by Hashem, but you have no hold on it. Temporarily put into your possession, temporarily given the rights to use. What happens next year? Hard to know, hard to understand. I heard tell over, in the name of Rav Chaim Kanievsky, that a man recently came over to Rav Chaim and said as follows: $80 million. Within the past 6 months, I've lost $80 million. And Rav Chaim Kanievsky looked at him and said, "Oy, what you could have done for the yeshivas. You were granted wealth. You were allowed to have access to it. You didn't have it forever. What you could have done with it was astonishing. What you did with it was nothing. What a shame." You will hear oftentimes today, we live in difficult times. My friends, I don't think there were ever times that were not difficult. And I'd like to share with you a little dose of reality. In 1918, approximately 20 million people died of influenza, the flu. In Normandy, approximately 2 million soldiers died in just a few days when they were taking the beaches on D-Day. How many million Jews died from effectively 1941 to 1945? What was it like as an 18-year-old finding yourself in the displaced persons camps after the war ended and you didn't have a single living relative? There are many times in history that were difficult. I don't think the times that we live in really classify as difficult times. You see, we've gotten so accustomed to this illusion that it's always going to be unbelievable, astonishing wealth, luxuries, unbounded, constant affluence, that the minute there's a little pop in the bubble, are they? Now, my friends, I'm not making light of people who have tsaras, and there are people who have lost jobs, there are people who have mortgages that they can't pay. There are real problems. But from a global perspective, I'd like to share with you one very simple thought. There's a cycle to life. That cycle is repeated over and over and over. The market flourishes. People make lots of money. The bubble bursts. Then it starts building again. The market flourishes. People are making lots of money. And then the bubble bursts. And whether it be the stock market, whether it be gold, whether it be diamonds, whatever that vehicle that's bringing people lots and lots of wealth ends up falling away, and you could watch it like a cycle. It rises, it falls, it rises, it falls. And the most astonishing thing about the human is when you're on the crest, you have the sense the party will never end. It's never going to stop. We're going to make more money and more money and more money, even though you're fully aware that there's a 7-year cycle that's repeated itself time after time after time, up and down, up and down. Even though you know, wow, this time is worse, it can't possibly end. And then when it crashes, we hit the bottom. It can't ever be this bad. It's never been this bad. This is the worst of the worst. Again, I am not saying that the current situation isn't fraught with issues. But what I am saying is that the human is rather strange. During the party, the sense is the party will never end. Then when he crashes down, it's like, how could it ever be? It was never supposed to end this way. My friends, I have one very simple mushal that I think well describes the way the human race watches their destiny. Imagine that there's a Ferris wheel. The Ferris wheel is very large and it goes around. And that's the nature of the Ferris wheel. It starts on top, and then it goes on the bottom, then it goes back on top, and that's the nature of the Ferris wheel. It goes around. Imagining that you're at the very, very apex, someone takes a snapshot, hands you the Polaroid picture, and you've got it. Ha ha! This is it! I'm on the top! And this is it for life. I'll always be here, forever here. This is reality. Well, I'd like to share with you that's not reality. If you'd like to understand reality, it's called a movie camera. A camcorder that catches the full cycle on the way up and on the way down and on the way up again and on the way down. And it goes around and around. It's a Gilgal HaSoviv. And it's not just about money. I'm young, I'm healthy, and I'll always be this way. I can never get old. I just can't. There's a snapshot that's taken of my life right here, and this is where I will be forever. I'll never change. I'm afraid it doesn't work that way. I'm having great success. My children are all in good yeshivas. Everything's going great. This is the snapshot that will always be, because this is the current reality. But that too changes. And the only shocking thing about the human is that we live through these things. If we have a little bit of history behind us, we see it happened before. We come back to the very same delusional state. And we assume again it'll last forever. And then when it falls, it's, oh my goodness, how could it be? I think there is a very, very healthy dose of philosophical depth that's lacking from the American culture. And that healthy dose of philosophical depth requires understanding that life is real. There are ups, there are downs, good moments, bad moments. Thank God it's Hashem, the creator of the heavens and the earth, who runs the economy, who continues to keep the world in existence. But it's not just about money. It's about health, it's about suffering, it's about finding shidduchim, and if it's for you, it's for your children. There are many, many issues that occupy the human's life, and there will always be changes in them, there will always be new things coming up, but that's the reality of life. There are no snapshots that remain. Understanding that it's a Gilgal HaSoviv, constantly continuing, like a Ferris wheel, up and down, is a basic to understanding life. But I'd like to share with you one more step, and that is answering, why is it that if you become wealthy, you become haughty, and if you become haughty, you automatically forget Hashem? And the reason for that is something that the Chovos HaVavos explains to us. He says there is a basic truism. An Eved requires an Adon, and an Adon requires an Eved. For a servant to be a servant, by definition, he must have a master. By definition, for a master to be a master, he must have a servant. They're axiomatic. They can't exist one without the other. Explains the Chovos HaLevavos, Hashem is the creator. Hashem is the master. We are the creation. We are the servant. The midah of gaiva is utilizing the midah of Hashem. I am great. I am mighty. I am powerful. Those hargeshim, those senses are appropriate and proper if in fact you're mighty, weighty, and truly choshev, as Hashem is. However, they're delusional when the human being utilizes them. When the human thinks that he's mighty and he's powerful, he's living in a snapshot of time that he thinks will last forever, and it's utterly false. What he's doing is he's adopting the midah of Hashem. He's pretending he is the master. Hence, he cannot have a man's master. If you're mighty, if you're powerful, if you're the master, you can't have a master. And if you have arrogance in your heart, you cannot serve Hashem, because I'm the master. No one will tell me what to do. I will serve no one because I am great. Hence, the minute a person has any sense of arrogance, any sense of haughtiness in his heart, serving Hashem becomes impossible. Not difficult, not a little bit hard, becomes mamish impossible. And I believe that this Rashi is sharing with us a tremendous yesod. That yesod is that reality is that any situation will pass. My name may be Rothschild, I may have millions in the bank, I may have unlimited assets, but that's a delusion, because that too will pass. Even if my wealth doesn't leave me, which it always does, it lasts a generation or two, three or four, eventually it leaves you. But even if your great wealth doesn't leave you, don't worry about it, you'll leave your wealth. You will not be on the planet forever. You will die, your money may be here, but you sure won't be. And the only way you can have this sense of, I'm an usher, I'm different, as if you live in a snapshot of time where the current situation will be forever, says the Torah, when you loan the ani the money, understand it's the ani within you. You are the ani. As the Granat explains, there are no chazakas, not for health, not for well-being, not for shalom bayis. Every Rosh Hashanah, the question is revisited and redecided, and my very future is being determined. I have no guarantee, and because I have no guarantee, I humbly stand in front of Hashem as a poor, impoverished person asking for help. Hashem, please help me. Understanding that you have talents is not arrogant. If you have a beautiful singing voice and you know it, that's not arrogant. If you have a lot of money in the bank and you're fully aware of it, that isn't arrogant. It's when you take credit for the attribute, when you feel that I'm different, when you become the great me, when you become the rich man, I'm different than you. I can't exactly say why, but it's just I'm fit for praise and honor. I'm chashev. I'm just sort of a different kind of guy than you. That's the reshet. That's the trap of gaiva. And that will bring you straight to Gehenim, because you will not be any fun to be around. You will never be an Eved Hashem. You will corrupt your inner nature. And I think what Rashi is telling us is the solution to this is to understand how to be grounded. The way to be grounded is to recognize your talents, recognize your strengths, recognize all that's been given to you, but recognize exactly that point. It's been given to you as a matana. And when you say those brachos in the morning, say them with an intense outpouring of emotion, not just because it will increase your avodas Hashem, not even just because it'll increase your happiness, it'll increase your sobriety. Understanding when I say the words, Pokeach Ivrim, Hashem, you are the one who gives sight to the blinded. Not the big mighty me, not the brilliant eye. I cannot reconnect the optic nerve. It's beyond my capacity. It's just a mere 3 million neurons. But even the great me can't weave it. Saying those words and understanding what they mean, and saying Matir Asurim, Hashem, I stand up because you have granted me this. Hashem, you've given me the ability to exist, to live, to walk, and to move my hands, to sense. Hashem, you are the granter of that, brings you to a very, very healthy dose of reality. And that reality allows you to understand, I am the Nivra, Hashem is the Borei, I am the servant, Hashem is the master, and any situation that I exist in will change. If I'm healthy and well, it will change. If I'm sickly, likely it'll change also. If I'm having a tremendous, tremendous year of affluence and success, it won't last forever. It too shall pass. But understanding this and understanding where it will lead me to is a key to understanding life in a much more sober way. I'd like to close with one last observation, and that is something that the Orcha Sadikim shares with us. He says, if you would like to guarantee that you have no Gan Eden, if you would like to guarantee that you have no Olam Haba, all you have to do, he says, is allow yourself to have one Midah Ra called Gaiva, called arrogance. If a person has arrogance in his heart, he says, he may well eat up all of his Olam Haba, everything that's waiting for him. And I'd like to explain to you what the Orcha Sadikim is saying with those words. We all bank on something in Olam Haba. I may not be the biggest tzaddik in the world, but I try. I daven, I learn, I do chesed, I give tzedakah. I hope to have something waiting for me. However, it really depends on what you're doing. You see, the question is, when you're doing that act of chesed, who are you serving? Are you serving Hashem, or are you serving my shame? Are you serving God, or are you serving you? You see, I would like to be known as a very great individual. So I'm going to make sure that everyone knows about the tzedakah that I give. I want you to know exactly who I am. So when I stand up and make my proclamation that I hereby dedicate this yeshiva, and I put my name right there for all to see, what I've just done is one of the most expensive kinyonim in the world. You see, I didn't give that money to serve Hashem. I gave that money to serve my name. That's not a ma'aseh tov. You see, the kavana doesn't merely color the act. The intention defines it. Is it serving Hashem or is it serving me? If you have arrogance in your heart, like that rock singer who says, enough about me, let's talk about you. What did you think about my latest recording? The whole world is me. Everything in the world is about me. I'm the center of the universe, and everything that I do is only to serve me. That is the essence of what Gaiva leads you to. And I believe the reason why this is a very important concept to think about now is because we live in beautiful times. We live in magnificent times when people who had money for many, many years wake up and they say, oh my goodness, I'm not half the man I used to be. That's a tremendous opportunity to be grounded now. And if you've lost a lot of money and you now recognize something, that recognition is, this too shall pass, for the good, for the bad, but that sense of I'm secure, parnasa, baruch Hashem, parnasa is not the kind of thing I have to worry about, that's a delusional state. And it's a very, very dangerous delusional state. Why? Because as long as you feel independent, as long as you feel you don't need Hashem, you're in grave danger. Because you will, as the Torah describes it, you'll increase your wealth, you'll become haughty, you'll forget Hashem, because that's the nature of the human heart. The nature of the human heart is, if he doesn't have dependencies upon others, if he doesn't depend upon Hashem, he feels independent, mighty, wealthy. This state will last forever, and he's bound to fail. He's going to buy himself right into the Gehenna, but right into the Gehenna. And the greatest solution to that is understanding it will pass. When you find the market crashes and you find a very different reality, that could well be the greatest moment of your life. It could now define the next 20 years of your life in a much different way. Because you might have been serving yourself until this moment, and then you wake up and you say, I get it. I cannot control the marketplace. I cannot control my destiny. I depend upon Hashem. And now I, as a servant of Hashem, recognize my relationship. Think about it the next time you hear someone decry the horrible times that we live in. They're not so horrible. Is it painful? Yeah, a lot of growth is painful. But they're remarkable times when you look at people in a very different light. And when people look at themselves in a very different light, that's an opportunity to grow, it's an opportunity to change, it's an opportunity to really accomplish what we put onto the planet for. May Hashem grant us the wisdom, understanding, and ability to put this into practice.